We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
This is Darius Miller.
This is Drew Hardy.
This is Lance Thomas, Tyree Gavin.
Jason Smith.
Anthony Dingo, the World Republican.
You're listening to.
And you are listening to In the Know.
In the Know.
The Bourbon Street Shots.
Bourbon Street Shots podcast.
All Pelicans, all the time.
Welcome to a special trade extravaganza show. Well, not really extravaganza, but really just one trade. But we're trying to make this really exciting. Michael, this is really exciting, though, right? Tell us what the trade is.
Well, those details are still coming in. I mean, by the time this pod released, we're probably going to be a little bit dated, but I'm okay with that. I mean, as of right now, it looks like a protected future first-round pick. Some sources are saying top 20 protected, but a protected future pick just for Ashik and I guess $1.5 million in cash that'll go into Benson's pocket to help pay for what is a huge balloon payment for Ashik next year.
So, you know, last year people were talking about Ryan Anderson for Ashik made sense. Ryan Anderson for Ashik makes sense. And now we're getting Ashik and keeping Ryan Anderson. If that's the case, if nothing comes out extra about this trade that suddenly we're sending Ryan Anderson somewhere, which would make me cry, we would be basically guaranteed have a front court of Davis, Ashik, Ryan Anderson.
You're not going to put Babbitt in there?
No, darn. Babbitt's not important to me anymore. I got Ashik. I mean, is that not like three? That's almost like a dream rotation. You have every possible skill set you might need among your three big men.
Yeah, I mean, it's the super version of what they wanted. You think back of what they wanted from Robin Lopez, and ideally you get 15 to 20 minutes of some defense. They knew he wasn't going to give them great rebounding, but maybe box out the other guy while Aminu and Davis grab boards. You know, you wanted somebody who had a little bit of offensive game, etc. If this is that to the next degree, I mean, you're talking about your I think your number one need was somebody who could just be a monster on the boards, and Ashik has proven that he could do that. Obviously a rim protector. Now you have a three-man rotation with Rhino where you could really play the matchups, and you know, all three of those guys go well together. Rhino and Ashik, Rhino and Davis, and then Davis and Rhino. I mean, there's really not a minute, if not a reason, if healthy, to give a minute to anybody else. You've got three ideal bigs that pair together, and you're always going to have two very high level bigs on the court. I just think it's a fantastic move.
Right, and I need to say this because you brought it up. When you're saying Omer Asik is a fantastic rebounder, we're talking the second best rebound rate in all of the NBA last year. He rebounded 21.7% of all rebounds while he was on the floor. I mean, only Andre Drummond did better than that. He rebounded better than DeAndre Jordan, Reggie Evans, super rebound. I mean, he was the best. He was the best possible rebounder we could actually get our hands on in the league. And I can't be any more excited about that. I mean, over and over again, we kept seeing this team just have games where they could not grab a defensive rebound, even if they threw Aminu out there to help. And now they have a guy who's going to basically be able to guarantee 30% of all defensive rebounds fell into his hands when he was on the court.
Yeah, I mean, and you think about like our MLE tournament and the guys that we've been trying to sell ourselves on, from Kevin Serafin to Emeka Okafor and Andre Blotch. And, you know, it was a weird year for Asik last year, but I mean, honestly, if we go back to a year ago, this guy had a ton of value, was coming off a great season. The year before that, you and I were on this podcast, and Asik was one of my primary targets. I actually wanted to bring in the Turkish connection of Asik and Ilyasova, I remember.
Yep.
And he was extremely productive that year as well. It was just off the bench, but he and Taj Gibson led that second unit for the Bulls that were just impossible to score on. And now you come to a point where Houston's going all in for LeBron and Melo, and you can't really blame them. And all of a sudden, a guy who we were having legitimate conversations of, you know, a healthy Ryan Anderson, is this a trade we should make? Jerry V on this podcast straight out saying, you trade Ryan Anderson for Omer Asik. Right now, you got the best of both worlds. You get both guys on your roster by waiting a year, and, you know, maybe you give up the 22nd pick in 2016. I could live with that.
Yeah. So I'm going to throw this out there. If you go to his basketball reference page, they do have a list of nicknames that he has been called in the past. So I'm going to rattle off these nicknames and tell me which of these you like. And honestly, if you actually like any of them, I'll be shocked. But hey, they're here. So his nicknames are the Turkish Delight, the Turkish Hammer, a Seek and Destroy.
Oh, all right, you can stop. Come on, are we really going to go? There's nothing going to be better, but I'll let you continue just for our listeners.
There's only one more, and Istanbul.
So Turkish Delight, I kind of like, only because growing up, there was a yogurt shop called Delights that my mom brought me to every Sunday, a little bit of sentimentalism. Istanbul, I would like if he played for Chicago. The
right.
Turkish Hammer I don't like just because of the Polish Hammer that Adam Carolla produced a movie. Asik and Destroy is, I mean, how about Skynet, Asik and Destroy? I don't know. We could put it together. But yeah, I'll definitely go with Asik and Destroy. And I don't know. I mean, this immediately upgrades your defense, your rebounding. I mean, we'll get a little bit to the offensive end, I'm sure, but I just, I still need to know details more salary-wise, only because, I mean, if I'm trying to play the devil's advocate and don't love the deal, the one concern is I don't see how we absorb him into our cap space. I know this stuff fairly well. I know Della's people know it better than me, but I can't see how it could just be Asik in the cap space. And even if it is, you lose your MLE in that situation. So, you know, all of a sudden now you just have the room exception. You still have that hole at small forward. So if I'm trying to play devil's advocate of things that I don't absolutely love, I still have this gut feeling that that Austin Rivers is going to have to be sent out somewhere in order to make the room for this, and you lose your MLE, which made our whole MLE tournament worthless.
Right. But, of course, you know, my guy Thabo was getting his butt handed to him by P.J. Tucker anyway, so I don't care about the MLE tournament anymore anyways. Because it's all about whether my guy was winning. And as soon as my guy stopped winning, I didn't care. So let me just rattle off some things about Ashiq, and you tell me your take on them. First off, 27 years old. Does that still fit into Dell's young veteran, or is that too old for that? 27 is. What do you think?
I'm so tired of hearing that the guy's going on third. I mean, we watched the finals. How many guys in this final series we just watched are not only in their 30s, but well into their 30s? So, no, it doesn't. To me, I look at more miles on the tires, and You're looking at a guy who has 5,400 minutes of game played. I guess if you add in the playoffs as well, you're looking at about 6,000 NBA minutes on his tires. I mean, guys burn through that in less than three seasons. So, you know, far less than three seasons. So, I mean, I see... You know, I see it that way. I basically see he has two full years of starters minutes on his legs. He was a backup, you know, three out of the 4 years and really just only has heavy minutes in one season. And that's the season, you know, he performed fantastically. So, the age, when we just watched the finals where so many guys were in their 30s, no, it doesn't concern me at all. And, you know, I look more at minutes played anyway, where a guy like Luol Deng is way older than people who are actually older than him because of the minutes he's played. So,
yeah.
I mean, how about you? Do you?
27 years, to me, that's the beginning of your prime. So as far as I'm concerned, you keep him for the next 4 years, and you've got his four best years. So why would you ever complain about getting someone's four best years? So I think the age is exactly where you want it. I mean, if you can get earlier, whoop-de-doo. It's just, I mean, this is the NBA. In 4 years, does anyone have any clue what the Pelicans roster is going to look like at all? So,
yeah.
Yep. I think it's the right time to be grabbing him, even if he only has 1 year left on his deal, which is the next question. Any concerns 1 year left on his deal, or do you just pretty much feel like, you know, if he works out, it doesn't matter, they can keep him?
No, I mean, if they're being this aggressive, and again, what people have to remember, like, Tom Benson is giving him a $15 million check this year.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, as far as, I think this is answered in that way, this has answered a huge question for me. I never knew one way or the other, but wondered, okay, when this team becomes a contender, would Benson be willing to pay the luxury tax? In a way, he is paying the luxury tax this year, because He's going to have all this salary on the books, and you know Dell is going to get up to probably $65-66 million in salary, but off of those books is going to be another $7 million that Benson is actually going to be paying, because, you know, I mean, it counts for 8.3, but there's a $15 million balloon payment, so. You know, I think that's another thing I've liked about the trade is it has answered that little question for me. But no, they're not going to be this aggressive, you know, obviously not target a guy. I mean, this is a guy that they've had their eye on apparently for at least 12, 13 months now. They're not going to, you know, look at that, target that the way that they develop guys and usually bigs in our system get better in the second year. They're not going to go all through that not to re-sign him. So, I mean, it's a guy that, you know, I had always said, prepare for 2015 if I'm Dell, and Ashiq was one of those guys on that list. Now you get him a year early, you have his bird rights, and, you know, you could start putting that trio together and learning how to play with them. And I think it's a perfect timeline.
Okay. One more question for you, though, because this you have to at least address it. Last year, he didn't want to play for Houston. He actually sulked and pouted and sat on the bench and because he wasn't a starter anymore. Does that concern you at all? Like, what? Let's say he's only getting 24 minutes a game because Anderson and Davis get most of the front court minutes.
No, see, that's not the part. I mean, I feel that he wasn't a team player. He kind of turned his back on his team. I mean, and this is all reportings, and we can't know for sure. But yeah, this would be if I was drawing a pro and cons column, or you know, things that I'm worried about, things that I like. This would be a type of things that I'm worried about. That you know, he got upset after his career year, felt disrespected, and instead of that necessarily motivating him, he kind of turned his back on his team a little bit, or at least that was the perception. Now, the thing that I think offsets that is, what better way to motivate a guy who's pissed at his ex-team than let him play him four times? Like, this is the part I'm shocked about and was always shocked about, that Houston kept him in the division. I mean, they're clearing space here, but they're not getting something great back. I mean, best case scenario, they get the 21st pick in some draft in the future.
Provided it is a top 20 pick.
Yeah,
top 20 protected.
That's something we have to, you know, hopefully we'll know by the end of the night. But yeah, if it is, so you just got to wonder, per Windhorse. Yeah, no, I don't understand. It will go to Houston. Okay, this is weird. So the protection is weird. It will go to Houston if it falls between the late lottery, so I'm guessing like 12 and 20. So Houston only gets the pick if it falls between, you know, whatever the protections are.
Well, that makes sense because Houston was the first team to do that thing with the Raptors where they said it would only get a pick if it was better than a certain point, and the Raptors agreed to it. So basically they came back and said, we only won if it's better than 20. And the Pelicans said, well, we're only giving it to you if it's worse than 12.
Yeah, and I think that's fair value. I mean, that's essentially the range. That's pretty much exactly the pick that Washington gave up for Gortat last year. And
yep.
I think depending on what you need, Ashik and Gortat are similar players. I would take Ashik for our team. But there are other teams out there that I could see, you know, preferring Gortat, but they're in that same range. But when you look at our specific needs, you need a guy with low usage, you need a guy who's defensive oriented and can rebound. I don't know if I could figure out three or four centers that help the team more. I mean, like, the first one that came to mind would be like, you know, Joakim Noah and Marc Gasol. Those would be my ideals right now.
Right.
If I were to get what it,
but they're also, you know, both basically max players or
right. And they're unattainable guys. Of the attainable guys, I don't know how could you possibly find somebody better? So, yeah.
Right, flat out, who would you rather have, Lopez or Ashik?
Oh, not even, I mean, Ashik, and, you know, and I'll never, you know, I remember, you know, when the Blazers were starting to get good last year, that was a rumor of, well, can the Blazers upgrade from Lopez to Ashik? Because,
mm-hmm.
you know, now that would really make them contenders. But yeah, I don't think that's even close. Now here, you know, I think a lot of people like us, if anybody does, because we look at both sides and we're not homers. Here's a concern. Does, you know, we saw Tyreke really have issues last year when you had a big plotting center sitting in the middle and teams not really having to respect him. Do you, you know, does having Ashik in there, do you kind of have to work your lineups where you don't have so much of Tyreke and Ashik together?
Yeah. So, I mean, here's the one thing that about Ashiq that you have to be aware of. He has somewhat of stone hands. He's got a turnover rate of 19% last year. The year before that, it was 19%. And the year before that, it was 25%. This is a guy who's not particularly good at catching and holding on to the ball if he's having to move or do much. So in a lot of respects, offensively, he's not that far from Steensma.
And the pick and roll, last year I watched every one of his pick and roll possessions. He is definitely a better finisher, and you know,
he's a better finisher, but he will still miss a surprising number of layups. I'll say right. that. I mean, just if you watch him, he'll miss shots that you would expect most big men to finish. He will miss more than his share, but he's not terrible. We're not like, you know, he's not going to be completely embarrassed in there. But that is a concern. If we're going to be playing Ashiq with Tyreke Evans, well, we now have two non-shooters on the floor. So if we are bringing back someone like Aminu at small forward, or we sign a small forward who maybe is not the best shooter in the world, that's a serious concern. You have to surround him with shooters. But if you just have Ashiq working the baseline or being the pick and roll man, you can surround him with Anderson or Davis, and that frees up plenty of room inside, because both of those guys can obviously attack from the perimeter or create space as necessary. So, I mean, I'm not saying it's not something that we can just go blah, blah, don't worry about it, but you can work around it as long as the other pieces we grab this year are grabbed with the intention that we need to create space with shooters. So, I mean, he's not a terrific offensive player. Defensively, the guy's a monster. I mean, this is a guy who's, you know, had defensive ratings that average out to 100 over his career. And last few years he's with Houston, they've been not a very good defensive team, and they improved when he went on the floor. So, we keep saying this over and over again, this team needed to improve defensively. Offensively, not so much. If they're healthy, their offense is sick. So
right.
Grab the best defensive center available. I mean, if you just just took the centers in this league and said, who are the best defensive centers, Ashiq is in the top five.
I agree. And then, you know, you expect Davis to be, you know, in the top five in the total NBA within the next year or two. You know, you add the rebound. I mean, if you're getting 2012, 2008, actually, I'll say even the year before that with the Bulls, 2011, 2012, or 2012, 13, Ashiq, if you were to get a solid small forward, not even a great defender, but if you were to get a solid defensive small forward, I mean, what are we talking about as a realistic uptick as far as our defensive rating? What would you say the range could be? Let's say we add, I won't even go PJ Tucker, but let's say we add somebody like, gosh, I don't know, who was somebody in our MLE tournament. Let's say we add a Jordan Hamilton. I don't know. I don't even know who to put here, but just an average small forward who could, you know, play good team defense, a veteran guy. What do you think is the realistic range for the Pelicans' defensive rating next year?
So if Jrue Holiday and a decent small forward and Davis and Ashiq are on the floor, I mean, you're probably looking at, you know, something that'll be in the lower teens, I would bet, and could have the potential to be in the top 10. Depends on what that shooting guard is, because we all know the Eric Gordon effect to defense. So if you put a -8 in there, you're pretty much screwed defensively. But, you know, it doesn't have to be Eric Gordon. It could be Tyreke Evans, shooting guard, right?
Well, that would be the hope. And, I mean, do you think, let's say, 82 games, Ryan Anderson is completely healthy. We know that Ashiq is going to start.
Mm-hmm.
How many games do you think Ashiq finishes versus Rhino finishes?
15%.
So Sheik finishes 15% of games.
Yeah.
And that would be in, like, what kind of situation? Like, draw me up a situation in which a Sheik finishes.
That would be in those rare situations where someone like DeMarcus Cousins or Dwight Howard are totally torching us. And they feel like we can't stop them unless a Sheik's on the floor. And so he's there. But even then, I wouldn't be surprised if Ryan Anderson was still on the floor. So is Davis, a Sheik, and Ryan playing with a pair of our guards?
That was going to be my next nerd, get overly excited question. Do you think that those three guys, Davis, Anderson, and a Sheik, could play for minutes in a game together? And how would you see that working on both ends?
They can, but you would have to have a small forward on the opposing team who is not particularly swift. You'd have to have, or they'd have to be somewhat limited. I mean,
for Ryan Anderson to cover, or for Davis,
either one.
Okay.
So like, I don't want Davis to be my small forward on the perimeter trying to shut down a guy. If we saw him try that a little bit this season, and he's pretty solid at it, but he's not great at it yet. He's still got to learn how to try to contain those guys by moving his feet ahead of time. But I don't want him out there. I want him being able to fly across and swat shots. So you'd probably end up with Ryan Anderson on the perimeter anyways, trying to guard those guys, and he's not going to be able to keep up with them unless they've got mediocre speed. I mean, we would end up with a situation where we saw, like in the Eastern Conference, where David West was somehow supposed to guard Ray Allen. It's not happening. So you can do it, and you could definitely do it as a change of pace thing. And you can definitely do it if they have a limited small forward who really can't do a whole lot. Which, small forward isn't a deep position in this league. I mean, you're talking five guys who are really good, and then there's a pretty steep drop-off. So there's definitely the opportunity to do that. And you put them on those three guys on the floor next to Holiday and Tyreke Evans, and you're going to have a pretty devastating change of pace lineup.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I mean, so if you're looking at just the 96 minutes among the bigs, and again, this is all Ryan Anderson is back 100% and, you know, no issues assuming that. How do you see splitting up the 96 minutes between the big men?
So, I don't know. In some respects, I expect Jason Smith to be back more likely now than before. So I would expect that you would see something like, of course, the 36 to 38 minutes that Davis would be getting. Then you'd probably get another 32 minutes for Anderson, which leaves you about 28 minutes left. Most of that will be Ashik, but I wouldn't be surprised if we kept Smith and every once in a while peeled 4 minutes off of Anderson, gave him 10 minutes of Ashik's time, and we saw him out there for, you know, 10 to 14 minutes per game just to cause some energetic havoc in
right.
the 60 games he's available. You could say the same thing about Withy, though, too. So it all depends on how this whole trade works out, because as I understand it, this trade will have to wait until after the draft to be able to go forward anyways. We can't, of course, trade another draft pick until we're past the draft, and then we can trade a draft pick. So that's part of the rules. So we probably won't see everything about this trade until a little bit afterwards. But, you know, you can't go into a season with only three guys. But with or Jason Smith as your fourth big man, I am 100% behind having that. I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it's really hard to talk about, you know, the scope. Exactly what I would grade this trade. I can't imagine in any scenario given this trade less than a B+, but it really starts to get into the A range if, you know, there's a way that they can manipulate contracts, non-guaranteed deals, etc., you know, to preserve their MLE or even bird rights on other guys who are free agents of ours. I don't know. That's where I'm at, where I'm kind of can't fully talk about this deal because, you know, I have to figure out what some of the other parts is and then how this allows us to fill that small forward position, because now I think you look at the guard position and you're absolutely loaded. You look at the big man position and, you know, assuming that, you know, you do have options of with the Ajinsa, Babbitt, and Smith as your fourth and fifth big men in some combination, you're loaded up front with all the different types of skill sets that you need. So at this point, I would like to know, you know, in what way that small forward position is going to drop. And then again, obviously, with Morrow, because if this trade goes down just as is and he's just being absorbed into cap room, then you're looking at, you know, first of all, having to waive all of the guys with bird rights and even non-guaranteed contracts like Whiffy, and you're making it impossible probably to bring back Morrow or sign a quality small forward. You're probably looking at that third, fourth tier of free agents. So, you know, that's going to be interesting,
let's say things turn out probably the way neither of us really want them to happen. But, you know, they basically have to end up releasing, like you said, turning down bird rights on players, letting go guys like, you know, Rivers and Withy that, you know, all of us are a little bit still interested to see how they turn out. Does a core, and I'm assuming Eric Gordon is going nowhere and neither is the rest of the core four. Does a team with six players, Eric Gordon, Tyreke Evans, Drew Holiday, Ryan Anderson, Anthony Davis, and Omer Asik, plus a bunch of end-of-the-bench minimum contract scrubs, have what it takes to make the playoffs in the Western Conference?
I mean, they win the Eastern Conference. I told you how I felt. I mean, I gave you, yes, some small sample size, but I gave you some stats on the core four without Eric Gordon, you know, last time. Now, I mean, like I said, I think Asik is the super version of what they always wanted. I think, you know, basically going back and watching the Glory Days series, what Monty seemed to do is he would play the center between 5 and 7 minutes in the first and third quarters. So that's 10 to 14 minutes there. And then he would play him in this stretch that Davis was out from the 2 minute mark of the first and fourth quarters to the 9 minute mark of the other one. So, you know, you're looking at 20 to 24 minutes, let's say 24. You know, you put Asik at 24, maybe extend it a little more, give him 26 minutes in those spots, you know, to save Anthony Davis's body, to have him fresh for the end of games and fresh throughout the season. I think that there's so much value on that that's not even Asik related. It's going to make have everybody else have a more clearly defined spot. I think it would be hard pressed for me to see a situation in which if they're relatively healthy, they don't make the playoffs. Cause I think that core four was already so dynamic. What it was missing was that one more front court piece and, you know, a guy who could just be a threat offensively at small forward. I got to believe that they could get that. So, I can't see how they miss. I can't see how they miss the playoffs. But then again, everybody in the West is trying to get better. So I would probably be able to answer that question better on July 15th.
Yep, I have one last question about this trade, and then we'll wrap it up so we can talk more about probably the draft tomorrow night if there anything happens there. Any concerns that we're helping out the Houston Rockets land another big piece? Because that's what people are saying, is this is moving Asik and then probably trying to move Jeremy Lin somewhere. That's the two-step to be able to offer some big free agents from, you know, Carmelo, or maybe one of the big three if Bosch decides he's going to also opt out. I doubt LeBron James, but maybe LeBron James. If you could put a $16, $17 million contract on the table for one of those guys, is that not just killing us? I mean, how do you combat Harden, another big guy, and Dwight Howard and Parsons, who will be still on that team probably as well.
Yeah, see, I think it's funny you asked me this because this is a question that I've asked you a lot in kind of a different way of do you worry about everything? I mean, first of all, you have to assume that they would have been able to send Ashiq somewhere else.
It's true.
Like they would have been
Boston,
able to dump
Boston
him.
Boston was looking into him at the middle of the year.
Right. So I mean, based on that, if they have a way to get LeBron James, they're going to be able to dump it anyway, and you know, then somebody else benefits from them dumping Ashiq as opposed to you. So I can't worry about that. Secondly, you know, if it's Melo, no, I'm not worried at all. I mean, if it's I'm worried if LeBron goes to anybody in the Western Conference. If he goes to Utah, I'm worried. So if it's LeBron, yeah, that's you know, a totally different story. But no, any of the other guys, I'm not. The thing I am worried about is, you know, and you always get worried about this, is teams know their own players. And, you know, again, I know you're not a huge football fan. Others will remember this, but everybody thought it was weird when the Philadelphia Eagles traded Donovan McNabb in their division to Washington.
And then he collapsed immediately after.
Yeah. That would be my only concern, but, you know, Ashiq did have some injury issues last year, you know, that would be my only concern, because I don't think it's a performance issue. I don't think he's losing anything performance-wise, but that would be my only concern is, do they know something injury-wise that, you know, nobody else does? I mean, if I had to look for something that might scare me a little bit, it is a little alarming that, you know, somebody would trade a starting center that they're going to have to deal with, you know, inside of their own division. But, you know, that's the only devil's advocate, you know, I could play here.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I'm not really worried about it. I mean, like you said, you build your team, and especially when you're in the position that the Pelicans are, don't worry about matchups yet. Get to the place where you can actually worry about the matchups and then start worrying about what other teams you're helping or not helping. I mean, if we were the San Antonio Spurs and we were doing something to help someone try to dethrone us, that might be a different consideration. But right now the Pelicans are just trying to get into the playoffs, and then they can start worrying about tweaking their team to get past their rivals. So right now, get to the playoffs, then see what we can do. So, and I think this helps them.
Yeah.
Got anything else to say about this trade?
No,
it's gonna be
really interesting to see. Like I said, it's a B+ for me. It turns into an A if the Pelicans find a way to keep their MLE by doing this trade creatively and adding that small forward. But I think we got a lot of questions answered today. I think we got the best possible center for the role that, you know, we were destined to have out there. So now it's just about, you know, the other little movements that come here and there. We could forget about, you know, the Greg Monroe stuff and all of that. It's obvious the next move is going to be for some kind of small forward. We could still pray and hope that, you know, Eric Gordon has gone one way or the other, but a huge, 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 you know, a huge need was filled today at a price that was maybe one third of what the asking price was just last summer. So I think in general, you have to be happy.
Yep. All right. So thanks everybody for listening to this special In the Know. And if something exciting happens in the draft, we'll have another one up tomorrow night. Yeah.